February 2nd, 2006. In your home, at work, and around the world, broadcasting without borders, this is Eye on the Future Radio with Hepzibah. Visit Eye on the Future's website at www.eyeonthefutureradio.com for upcoming guests. The topic for today's show, Cutting Through the Matrix, Management of Society, Predictive Programming, Exploitation by Agenda, including How Canada Fits In, Masonic Orders to the 360th Degree, plus much, much more, with Hepzibah's very special guest today, Alan Watt, researcher and author.
Never mind, you say, these Masons. How about their brothers of crime, the Jesuits?
Oh, yeah, they're all Masons, actually. That's the trick of all of this. It's like ancient Babylon, and if you understand why they called it the Mystery Babylon, because some people would say, well, it's those guys over there, and other people would say, no, it's that priesthood over there. And the reality was, it was a religion with a thousand faces, and that's the meaning of the goddess. The goddess is the church. The body of the church are the members. That's the body. That was the body of Osiris. Isis is the church, and so get a thousand faces under many guises. And when you realize that the Jesuit signs and so on are pretty well the same as all the other Masons, including the Mormons, the elect.
Well, that the Mormons is basically what people do not understand. It is openly, blatantly a Masonic church.
Yes, it is. And all the male members are allowed into the electi, and once they're into the elect, they go through the exact same rituals with the apron, the signs, the symbols, the plead to God for help, which is really a plead to your fellow men for aid. It's pure Freemasonry, yeah. And then Masonry itself was only given to the non-nobility, outside of priesthoods, that is, when they had to create a middle class to manage the Industrial Revolution. And so they created the Blue Lodges, the lower forms of Masonry. And that really was kicked off by the Rosicrucians in the 1500s, in fact. So it's all one and the same thing. And you can go to India, to China, to the higher orders of all the triad groups in China, and you'll find it's the same bunch worldwide. This is an ancient mystery religion that at one time they called Babylon, you know.
Isn't
Babylon is not just a place, it's a system.
Isn't it most interesting when you say that here at this moment, Chinese people are actually believing that most of China is free of religion. And a while ago, I was speaking to a friend who's a oncologist in China, and he said to me, no, no, he said, religion is very minor. I said, no, 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 no. I said, you know, you have a major overrun of the Masons there, even though they proclaim they're underground, they're not underground. And so is the Dalai Lama, a 33rd degree Mason, or 360 Mason, maybe.
Yes, in fact, the oddest thing is, one of the largest groups of evangelical religious people are Islamic. And they had world meetings, and they write lots of literature for the West. And the head of it is the Dalai Lama, the Buddhist. Figure that one out.
You know, when you say this, when you say this, most people haven't got a clue how dangerous this individual is, because he's totally supported by CIA money.
Yes, that's right. But of course, you must always realize that the heads of all religions, which are authorized religions, you see, they're not there to help the people, they're shepherds. And that's a good place to start, really, because the shepherd symbol, the good shepherd, goes back to the most ancient times, even Sumer, and probably the Harappian culture pre-Sumer, because Sumer did not learn their culture just overnight. It appeared on the spot as a full developed system in society and money and priesthood and so on. So the symbol of the king good shepherd. And we see that in all the Egyptian statues of pharaohs where they have their arms crossed and they have a little, like a walking cane in one hand. Well, that's the small crook of the shepherd. And another one is the rod. And the whole idea is the crook is to guide the people. You pull them, you get around the sheep's neck and you pull them to persuade them. And if he refuses, you use the rod on him. And that's what they call the system of law, which is initially a form of persuasion through threat, and then you use force if need be. It's the same system down through the ages. And when you take the symbol again of the sheep, it's the most domesticated, stupidest animal there is. All of its survival instincts have been totally bred out of it. And the shepherd, any good shepherd, walks into the sheep field, and he talks to the sheep, and they don't run away. They think he's a nice guy. He feeds them and talks to them. But when he wants to kill one, because that's their function, is to provide him with meat and wool, when he wants to kill one, he'll persuade it to leave the rest and coax it outside, out of their sight, and then he'll kill them, you see. So we've got to realize what we're saying when we say we're the sheep following the shepherd. And even hear a lot of Christians singing these songs about poor little sheep have gone astray, you know. What we're actually saying, we're demeaning ourselves, and you know, it's intentional too by the system that gave us these religions and have used them up to the present time.
But when you take a serious look at what is taking place right now, they're building all these pens for the sheep, like all these humongous prisons, so they're up to something to get rid of maybe the overload of sheep, maybe the rebellious sheep, like you and me.
Yes, this is not new either. This is the amazing thing about this. And the ancient Greeks wrote copiously about managing the herd, the people. And because they had so many islands, which could only stand so much of a population, the leaders of the different islands quite often got together every 10 years or 15 years and decided to have a war, and they'd go through how long it lasts and who would win and how many they wanted to kill off, basically. That was a form of population control. And this has gone down through the ages, the same thing. One of the later versions we have of it comes from Thomas Malthus. He was an economist. His theories are still taught in economics. And Thomas Malthus lived in the 18th century, and he published his thesis on population. And he goes into the techniques of managing slave populations in the colonies, how much to feed them to keep them workable but not too bright or strong that they might just walk off or fight or even have the ability to think too much. And so they had it down to a fine art by diet, specialized diet, minimalistic type, of how they could manage people. And he was a guy, he had a meeting, actually the European meeting for all the big corporations of that day,
uh-huh.
including the British East India Company, which was owned primarily by British royalty and the nobility. And they came up with a technique of encouraging plagues by putting poor populations, housing in swamplands where they'd be infected with mosquitoes, etc. And so we've got to realize this is the reality. This is what goes on at the top. It's always been this way. And the United Nations, which took over from the League of Nations, has a Department of Population Control. And we've got to realize that these guys don't sit and get paid big money to sit on their hands and make wish lists if they have power. They have been implementing methods of population control from for at least the last 100 years, I'd say, from the League of Nations onwards. Because with inoculations, when we study inoculations and follow the path of them and even the statistics of disease, we find more people getting the diseases they're inoculated for than the ones who didn't. And we now have the UN giving us annual statistic reports on the male population, the populations of sperm count. And And they give it so blandly, as the reading of some sort of mathematical book. And every year, last year it was down to 75% of what the man in 1950 had. So the present-day male around 20, 25 has only 25% virility left, basically. He's 75% sterile in 50 years.
Yeah, but not only that, when you say this, it seems that when they give their inoculations, that they are planning something so massive and devastating on such large scale, and you question the rest of the population, are they just like sheep? Do you think, Alan, that they have been so numbed that they no longer reason, or that they are so television-brained that they are followers and they can no longer think for themselves?
It's all of that and more. A good book to read is Between Two Ages by Zbigniew Brzezinski, who's been an advisor on this very speciality of mind control to quite a few presidents, including the present one in the U.S. And Brzezinski, in that book, has a chapter titled The Technotronic Era. And he said, shortly the public will be unable to think for themselves. He said, all they'll be able to do is to repeat what they were downloaded with by the previous night's news. And he said that will be accomplished by various means, and I'm sure inoculation is one of them. But he also mentioned heart technology, which we know is the ELF pulsations, which are cast out by, there are 57 bases worldwide doing this, and the heart carries signals to the brains, basically, of everyone on the planet, and can cause either a tranquilizing effect on one frequency, and the slight adjustment that can cause aggression or depression, rage, and so on. And people who are on shortwave can pick up the heart stations, which have been pulsing for the last 5 years continuously, day and night. And I've seen people being affected and becoming more tranquilized, basically. And take this a step further, Arthur Koestler, it's actually Koestler, wrote a book called The Ghost in the Machine. And Arthur Koestler worked for the United Nations. Prior to that, he was an officer for Stalin and came over to New York and taught there as a professor, and even on to the United Nations to work on ways of lobotomizing that part of the brain which is has your survival mechanisms there. He said this will be lobotomized because that person will no longer need their own self-survival abilities, because the state will be making taking care of and making all the decisions for them. And he said that they had found chemical and biological means to actually target precisely that part of the brain. He said the only problem is to either spray it on the people, and we know the aerial spraying's been going on.
Yes. Yes.
He said we can put it in their water supply, or we can inject it into them under the guise of inoculation.
Uh-huh.
And I think that not at all, basically.
I think, yes. I was going to say to you, there was a person who was visiting here a week ago, and this person was either in Los Angeles or San Francisco. I think it was in Los Angeles. And so he was walking on the street, and they saw the chemtrails in the sky. And she said she was so shocked because she broke out in blisters all over her hands, her face, her neck, her feet, anything that was exposed.
Yes, sir. Yep.
And we have heard some other interesting things. But you know, if we as a people, while we still have the control and the ability to control our brain from these monsters, why is it so difficult to wake them up and to say to the people, wherever they are on this planet, say no to this kind of monstrosity, because they are going to use basically religion versus religion to slaughter humanity to the point where they have more control.
Yes. Oh, yeah. They have most of the evangelicals convinced it's God's will, and it's in Revelations. And so they sit back in this shocked state of limbo, thinking, well, I don't like what's happening, but it's God's will. It's planned that way. It's planned by God, so... other ones go into escapism, thinking they're going to get raptured, which I call the Great Rapture. That one way or another, they're being neutralized. You see, that's the technique of religion: is to neutralize participation in your own destiny, and that's what's been done. I really think a lot of people are so conditioned. I call it level one reality, and that's the reality that has been presented to us from birth. And reinforced all through schooling, and then taken over by media, music, entertainment, etc. That gives us our version of reality. And I've talked to some very high maidens, way above the 33rd degree level, who've admitted to me that there are three levels of everything, reality included. Three levels of truth, three levels of physics, biology, and chemistry. And from professorship down, that's the lowest level of all of it, basically. That's why we have the most minimalistic type of health treatment. And then we see the Kissingers and the Maurice Strongs of this world running around the globe in their 70s,
yes,
putting in 14 hours a day. They have no old age diseases that even people in their 20s and 30s are coming down with now. They have none of that. They have vitality, and so they have a much higher treatment, of course, than we ever will be let in on. So that's how it's run.
Yeah, but when you say, when we look at the Kissingers and the Maurice Strongs and the rest of the puppets that are there, because I do believe that many of the people are puppets of these people, and... for a matter of fact, I'm very suspicious of Kofi Annan himself. But when we look at what is taking place and the scarcity of intelligence of people, you know, they're all hanging out in the pornography rooms. They're hanging out in the UFO rooms. They're hanging out.
Yeah.
In any of these things, but they're not hanging out there in the places where they are going to have their brains fed and their intelligence is expanded, and where people are going to know, well, you know, here is where I'm going to learn how to protect myself. And you know, Alan, it is a shame.
We're watching a form of suicide, in a sense, because we do notice that generally the elite, one way or another, will legally tell us what they're up to, even if it's in short little quips on the CBC television in Canada or whatever. It's up to you if you want to dwell on it or remember it even, but legally they do come out with these little strange announcements about things, and we don't take them seriously. When they go ahead and actually do it. We know that Canada and the United States and Mexico were basically officially united last March when they met at Waco and signed the agreement. The CBC did 1.5 minutes only on the news about it. And the global news did about 2.5 minutes. And at least one guy did ask them, is this the same as the European Union? And Mr. Martin jumped in to damage control and said, well, it's not quite the Big Bang. And then Mr. Bush jumped in, he couldn't help himself, and said, well, what's wrong with that, he said, you know. So they do tell us what they're up to.
Yeah, but Paul Martin was groomed by Maurice Strong.
Oh, yes. And you know, these guys all work for Power Corporation in Canada. We know that. They're all selected there. Power Corporation isn't a hydro owner, it's a company that selects future leaders for CEOs. agenda as far back as I can trace it in history. And we're watching it played out under many guises of democracy or whatever. It's one agenda, and it doesn't matter which party fronts for them. The same agenda goes forward. The more UN treaties are signed to do with the way we live, how we live, and even if we live, in fact, regardless of who's in power. So politics is just a sideshow. The real plan is that the Royal Institute of International Affairs basically has all of these members. All the politicians are members of it. The Canadian ones included. All Commonwealth countries have a Department of International Affairs. There's one in Canada. It's called the Canadian Institute for International Affairs. The non-Commonwealth countries are called Council on Foreign Relations. Every politician in the U.S. is a member of it. And they're all subject back to this little group in London, chartered. Mm-hmm. They're all chartered by the Queen to exist and function. And they have their whole plan written out in their members' books.
Well, of course, Bonnie Prince Philip has to keep in control because you know how he, at the moment, is so much in charge of the Masonic movement.
And the Duke of Kent traditionally has been the head of the English Lodge, and he, of course, is another relative of the Queen. So they're all involved. And when you watch these coronations on television, we're watching the same darn ceremony that goes all the way back to Babylon with the ermine coat that you'll see Nimrod wearing on his sculptures and so on. It's the same setup that the raised dais pyramid the Queen sits on, and the scepters and so on, and all these guys run about it with their red cloaks and their ermine fur. This is amazing stuff that we see and think is normal, without asking why. Why is this the same ceremony? Why is it so precise and ritualistic? Where do these rituals come from? What do they mean? And we're actually watching a very high Masonic initiation take place when we see these inaugurations on television.
Yeah, but the thing here is too, is a problem, is that we see these people now in Afghanistan. I feel very sorry for them. And we see these people in these other, all these other countries that someone would say, well, you know, they're primitive. They're not that primitive. But at the same time, I think that they are going to war to break them so that they are becoming like sheep.
Yes, what they've said in their own books, and there's a book here in Canada. If you can find it, it was by F. Scott Reed, who was up there with Lester Pearson, and he helped to write up the UN Charter with Alger Hitz. And Alger Hitz, as we know, was eventually imprisoned as being a Communist Party member for the Soviets. So this F. Scott Reed from Toronto had a book out called A Canadian Diplomat at the United Nations. It's worth a read because he goes into the fact, he says, we're setting up a global system where everything will be one system worldwide. And that's exactly what we're looking at here. It's everything must become one, as they say. And we even see that in the movies. One system, one, it's an economic system, by the way, and everything from economics is subject to the economic system, laws, etc. When you went into the Muslim countries there, and then into Iraq, the set up a central bank. That was the first part of it. The central bank then is subject to the World Bank, and then UNESCO comes in to train the next generation of children into the same universal global culture. So what they're doing is finishing off the last few countries that haven't come into the system, this worldwide system.
So,
and they wrote about this a long time ago. In 1500 A.D., John Dee came out with one of his books, and he was the guy who first coined the term the British Empire and suggested to Queen Elizabeth I. And he said, we can carry on a system where we will standardize the world. And then, of course, we know that in the early 1800s, Kipling came over with his poem to the U.S. in it. And the poem was the White Man's Burden. He said, we pass the torch on to you, because the U.S. is a takeover from Britain.
Well, that is logical. But, you, Alan, that is logical when you look down on the United States of America and you look from an aircraft, you can see all the symbols on the ground there everywhere.
Yes. Oh, I know. I know. It's disgusting how open it is. All of the symbols, again, going back from it to ancient times, and Britain and Europe, the royalty of Britain and Europe, had it more subtle in a sense. It was still the lions, unicorns, and so on. But they had other more hidden, subtle Masonic symbolism in their architecture. But the United States was created to bring in the New World Order. There's no doubt about it. And they also caused wars in Britain and rebellions to ship the losers out to populate the Americas. And that's the standard technique they use too when they want to get people to move. And they had rebellions in Scotland, for instance, which were definite setups, I'm sure of it, and that they cleared the highlands with millions of people and ended up in Canada and the U.S.
Australia and New Zealand. And someone said, oh, yes, there was already an agreement with New Zealand and Australia and Canada. Now, I said, you know, and you look at it, but I don't believe that Australia is going to stay in it.
I think one of the books put out, I have a collection of members' books of the Royal Institute of International Affairs going back to the 1930s. And these were financed and published by the Rockefeller Foundation, of course. But the one in 1937 they had in Melbourne, Australia, they said, and if you look at the speeches given by all the members in the members' books, it was said that eventually Canada would unite with America. And this is before World War II. They would build up China to be the manufacturer for the world. And then they went on to deal with the Soviet Union, how they must preserve the Soviet Union through the coming war, and how fortunate it would be if the United States were to be attacked by Japan. This is 1937. Everything that happens is on schedule. They plan it in advance. And so these members' copies books are books. These are incredible exposés of what they say themselves at their own meetings.
When you say,
and every politician attends them. You know.
When you say this, what would it be for them to be so important to preserve the Soviet Union? When in my book, The Aetherian Travelers and the Magical Child, which is an old book. And now people are starting to wake up and they say, oh, your prophecy is pretty accurate. I say, well, wait, when we see China and the Soviet Union ruling the world.
Mm-hmm.
But it will not
will
not succeed into eternity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we're dealing with, and we all know that the dialectic process, and ancient mysteries, of course, they always called it or couched it under the law of nature. And what you mean by that, if you understand the cycles of nature, such as summer versus winter, spring versus fall, that you can manipulate people by creating sites to choose from. And of course we know that the Soviet system was financed heavily from New York and London. It was set up basically by them. In fact, after they set up the Bolshevik revolution, the West has fed Russia right up to recent times. Canada was one of the biggest exports of grain. They could even feed themselves. So the Soviet system was a very fast way. Remember, it took over many, many small countries. And once again, they standardized the cultures into the one culture, really, the same system of politics, money, finance, etc., and schooling. And once it was all done, then we can remove it. So they got so much accomplished. kind of the exact same system, which parallels the British system, really. You know, from the local town right up through the different bureaucracies, it's all the same. One system. So that's why they set it up. And they also needed a threat, because power, when it wishes to tax the people, and of course your tax is simply a part of money being a con to begin with, it's a form of your labor, and you work for them. You create things and make things for them if we accept their money. And during wartime, they can tax to the hilt, and the people don't complain the same. Or the threat of war, and the Soviet Union, of course, was the threat of war, and we saw these incredible technology that was developed throughout the Cold War, which wasn't to fight any war at all. It was eventually to do with tagging us like cattle. That's coming with chip, satellites to watch everybody, supercomputers to manage us all. That's really what it was all about. So they used the Soviet Union as an excuse. I don't really think there was ever at the very top of the Soviet Union a possibility of a real unplanned conflict. I really don't. I look at Red Square and I look at the the British royal system, which is the same color coding, goes going back to Pythagoras. And red is their color for advancement, the red carpet. And we see Red Square, you know, we see red bands around the officers in Russia, around their hats, as you do with the British Army, the same thing in the British officers. There's just too many similarities there. And then when you look into the Kremlin, and you look at the vaulted ceiling, and you'll see the same symbols of the various gods of mythological times that you'll see inside the Congressional Hall in Washington, D.C.
But when you look at the whole situation as it is evolving, and somebody would say, yeah, what is this good for? What can we do to stop it? What can we do to change it? And how much longer will it go on? But at the same time, if we look at First Nations, and we look at them at the Maoris, and we are looking at the ones from Hawaii, and the ones here in Canada,
yeah,
and other places, then you say, oh, hey, that was a systematic also murdering out of the natural people.
Yes. Uh-huh. It's not only systematic, it was documented well. The plan to do it was documented. John Stuart Mill was one of the biggest economists. Any groups, again, his groups are still used by economists today. And his father was also called John Stuart Mill, and he was also an economist for the big corporations in London. And in one of his books, he had a list of the peoples in the 1700s. This was published initially. He had a list of the peoples who would have to be extinguished, eliminated, because they knew in the 1700s that they called him the red man could not fit into the coming economic system that was being set up. And therefore they have no use for them. And they mean that. They have no use for anyone who will not serve their system. The next on the list was the black man of Africa. That certain ones will be allowed to live if they could mimic the white man. That's what they said, mimic. And the others would have to be killed off by various Malthusian techniques. Well, we see it happening today, and it's no coincidence. They also even had the Irish down on that list at that time, because the Irish kept rebelling against authority. So anyone who would not buckle under their system and adapt to their system was to be eliminated. And that was written by the top economist of his day, that worked for the largest British corporations. So
no,
this is not news at all, you know.
No.
When you look what happened to the American Indians, apart from the awful way they starved them to death and moved them off land and so on, they put them into reservations in the most unhealthy areas, And that's right along the Malthusian policy of swamp lands and so on, where they'll get infected, etc. A shortage of food, good food, and bad climates and so on. This is all part of an extermination process. There is no doubt at all about it.
Yeah, Vatican is doing that at the moment to the gypsies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Vatican did that. And this is a very interesting thing, because Vatican did this also to the Zarathustrans, because they were not willing to buckle under and crawl either. And so they went there and did, as they did in India, they did mass murders. And when you speak to some historians, there's a little group in India, they're also Sindhus. And he said to me, he said, you have to realize that the priests came in India and went door to door. And the first people that were murdered were the people that were the medicine people and the soothsayers. And I said, well, it's interesting that you say that, because in Tibet 400 years ago, they went into Tibet and they started to slaughter there all the medicine people, all the shamans, shamans. And then the Buddhists came in, and the Buddhists are proclaiming that they are the originators of feng shui, but they are not, because it came from the original people. And they murdered and slaughtered, and actually in Tibet you can say every house, every street, every mountain is covered with some child's skin that they murdered. So when we look at what happened in Ireland, and we look at what is at this moment taking place to other people here upon the planet, and we see, you know, people in Afghanistan, you know, how many troops are they going to send there? You know, and how many people are they out to go and slaughter on this planet to submit everyone, and how long do they think it will take? Because it may be so that they are going into certain areas and use their nuclear force.
Yes. It's not only that, it's the more subtle methods of the follow-up, but to bring in the supposed healthcare workers to inoculate them. And, I mean, that's got most of the people in the West already sick. There's so many ways they have of killing people off. And you, I'm sure you're well aware we're dealing with something which is intergenerational. It doesn't think in one lifespan. It has a lot of time, you know. And it sets up its play. And if it takes a few generations to achieve its goal, it will do it. It doesn't lose track of where it's gone. There's insidious ways to kill, and there's also the overt, quick ways to kill. And they're using both at the moment. And anyone, as I say, they can't adapt to this new slavery system that they've got underway, who will all be tagged like property. And that's what it is. It's an inventory of everything they own that walks, flies, or crawls. Anything which won't succumb to that will simply be eradicated. And that goes for all peoples. All peoples. No one's exempted from this.
So when you say no one is exempted from it, but it seems at this very moment when we look at Israel and Palestine that they are being used as tools to manipulate horrific conditions so that they can also go after Iran, you know. And you every day you carefully listen, you hear another country that is added to the list.
Yes, well, you can go back to 92, and the New American Century group, the club that Wolfowitz and Cheney, Rumsfeld and Bush belonged to, published a report that they would have to come up and eventually invade a series of countries and take them over, beginning with Afghanistan, and that's why Ben Laden was supposed to be in Afghanistan. Everyone's forgotten that. And then he went on to Iraq. That was the second on the list. Followed by Iran, then Syria, and the CFR and the New American Century Group. And in his book, he said it went through the same list and why they'd have to take those countries over. And he said an interesting thing is he said we'll need something on the scale of a Pearl Harbor event to motivate the American people behind us. And bang, 9/11 comes along and away they go. It's amazing the luck these guys have, isn't it?
Well, it is amazing what they learned from World War II, huh? Because Canada wasn't going into World War II until they simulated an attack on Vancouver Island, on Victoria. And we are going to also have these people who do the Phantom Flight 93, the Shanksville Flight hoax. Yep. And that is, of course, this horrible thing, as you were saying, the 911, you know. But that is also amazing because every time they do something, it always, when you total it up, it comes to 911.
And that is the emergency number, of course, 911. Dial 911, yeah. It's the same thing. It's the Trinity in the 9, and the 1-1 is the Jachin and Boaz of Masonry. That's what it means. The twin pillars themselves, the two towers are Jachin and Boaz as well. So they use their symbols to the maximum, always, but the public don't understand them.
So what do you suggest that is possible to get the people to be in the know quickly?
Quickly, we know, I think, by simply studying history, it's difficult to motivate people who are totally conditioned very quickly. Even when they're undergoing crisis, they're more likely to follow the Good Shepherd again, the authoritarian one that they're used to, than anyone else, saying, hey, come this way instead. I think it's more important we look at what the control, which is pretty well everything, and how they can be basically repulsed. And it can't be done by weaponry, for instance. They have all the biggest toys on the planet and a lot more we've never seen before. And yet we look at where they're going and that gives us a clue as to the one thing they're afraid of. There's only one thing they're afraid of.
Yeah, but also it's
not the bulk of the people, you know.
No, but there's only one thing that we need to realize. They have also all the underground cities and underground railways. So what would they then be really afraid of?
Mm-hmm. The only thing they're afraid of in the meantime, I mean, sure they have these cities built up, and Maggie Thatcher was accused of putting lots of money in, making new ones for the elite in Britain, where the public would be barred from by SDS troops at the doors of the entrances. Sure they have this, but the thing is, in the meantime, they're only when you look where they're going, and with all this IDing of everyone, total information network, meaning everything that you do is to be monitored. The one thing they're afraid of is individual thought. That when we look at the media, the education, the barrage of distractions, disinformation, and so on, it's all to occupy our minds so that we do not think for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And what we want to do ultimately is to put chips in people's heads.
Yes.
And that was disclosed at the Loyola meeting, the International Science meeting, sponsored by the Department of Commerce in the U.S. 4.5 years ago. I have the 600 pages that came out of there, and they said we have the chip ready, it's been tested. Once this is in, it will be the end of individuality as we know it. And this top scientist from Japan said, he says, in fact, it will be impossible for an individual to even perceive of themselves as an individual. He said, we're more like a beehive. Well, again, that's the ancient symbol of Masonry, of the perfect society, the beehive. And when we see the Star Trek movies with the Borg, all connected to chips in their heads to a central computer, that's basically what they want to do, you know.
Well, that is how they are already programming the people, that this is an acceptable thing and this is something that can be done. But yet there has to be some somewhere something that we can do, that we can stop their train from rolling into their station, that we can say, wait a minute, we need to get the masses, we need to get the people who, even the ones who are so conditioned that can reason. And I would like to let you know, on the 19th, we're going to have Dr. Osama Al-Sadawi, an Egyptian hieroglyphic expert. And he is telling that this is all Masonic lies, because he said what is written there is not what they say is written there, and Egypt is very angry because he's going to disclose the truth. He says he doesn't care what happens to him. He's going to disclose the truth and take away the Masonic power.
Well, that would certainly be a help, especially if you have information which you can put in the Masons' faces on an individual basis even, you know. And it's not hard to find them, since you walk into any police station and the police chief will be one, so is the rest of the officers. So with the bureaucrats in your local government, be either Eastern Star or Freemasons. They're everywhere. This is their system. Yeah.
You know,
so if you have information,
the problem that we have here too, so long as people are not aware of the danger of the religions, because these religions are becoming more and more fanatic, and as we are seeing the control and the power that Rome has over people, and that we look at the power of the whole Masonic movement as a whole, and how it is being set up against and Islam against versus back and forth. But basically, they, as he said, Dr. Osama, he said this was already predestined when it started off to program the people. That's pretty scary.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's a fantastic method of mind control. There's no doubt about it. Especially when you grab them as children, you give them that as their reality. And as they go through life, every experience they have, they must refer it back to the religion for verification. It's a fantastic form of mind control. And even Gorbachev, who we know was knighted when he went to London, he's a knight of Lazarus, that's why he has the green Templar cross. That's his flag that he has outside the Presidio. He, in one of his books called Towards a New Civilization, he admits that he himself is an atheist. And in the same book he says, we are creating a new world religion to be based on earth worship. So they understand that they must create a new religion to take over from the old, which has served its purpose for the next race coming up, you might say, you know. That's where they're going. Religion has always been the major tool of mind control.
So what was the purpose of them, and still today, their fear of the Zarathustrans? What is it that they are so concerned with the Zarathustrans, their movement that is increasing, and they are doing everything they can to get rid of them, but it seems that it is like a big underground movement that is ticking and it is gaining power. What is their fear?
Well, I know one side of that particular religion is to do all the religions that were created since were basically taken from Zarathustrian concept of good and evil.
Yes.
A battle between the two, and Ahriman, you know, and so on. So they copied that into what they eventually became Christianity. So a person goes through their life with a credit card for his debts, and, mm-hmm. and another one for his good points. So they use the techniques of good and evil to force the people not to use their individual will for choice, but to go by their written laws. In other words, you have no choices if you follow the religion. If this happens in life, then here's the rule for it.
ridiculous, so isn't it?
Yes, but he took that concept of the Zarathustrianism and then used it against the people, to exploit the people, and then called it other religions, especially Christianity. Christianity was the perfected method of mind control, especially if you look at European cathedrals with the gargoyles of monsters,
yes,
nightmares, and so on. I mean, that for a primitive people who were uneducated, the masses, it fantastic imaginations, and used all these symbols of evil, scary entities. And then you walk into the church, you pay your tithe, the candles are lit, and here's the priest saying, "You're safe, now I'm in charge, God is here," you know. This is a fantastic method of mind control, yeah.
Yes, and not only that, I found it very shocking, because there are people who have handed down some of the information, and why would the United States of America go out to Iran and still bomb the sacred place of 10,000 years ago? Why would they go and still bomb it and make it virtually impossible for them to grasp the bread? And at the same time, what is it that they are afraid of? This is what we cannot understand, because people are taught to reason and to be empowered and to empower your children and to be educated, to live in the know, and yet the others, they seem to have a sense of fear and hatred. At the same time, we are seeing how people, and this is also very interesting, the very heavy programming that is going on in Iran and in Afghanistan and in Iraq and in all the Muslim countries. Oh yeah, and by the way, one of the princes from the Middle East, a friend from George W., bought up all the beautiful old Canadian hotels.
Okay.
Here in Vancouver, here in Banff, and in Lake Louise, and in Calgary, in Edmonton, all these beautiful old hotels were all bought up by this prince.
Yes, yeah. I'm not surprised. Yes, we're watching plunder go on by the high knights of plunder, and they all know each other, yeah.
Yeah.
And they will cheer the loops, you know.
Mm-hmm. We just are watching this and said, well, you know, this doesn't make sense. But then the Save-On food stores here in Canada are all owned by Jimmy Patterson, which is George W., his best friend, you know, his father, because they cruise around in their, in what is it called, this villa on water, you know. And so I said, you know, you can see it. It is like something heavily orchestrated, because Jimmy Patterson also is, he owns the church on Fraser Street, and he blows his trumpet there on Sunday morning. Well, I said, it is like this ominous.
Yes. Yeah. It is ominous. We're watching the looting of the planet of the new feudal overlords, basically. As they come to the front, they've always been there behind the scenes, but now they're openly looting under the color of laws. The countries, they're taking over, they're just looting them. And Halliburton gets the contracts worldwide.
Yes.
Including the rebuilding of Louisiana. And the $360 million that's just been allocated for building prison camps in the U.S. It's been allocated to Halliburton again. No bid went up for anyone, so Halliburton, Hal is the son, of course, in masonry. So that's why they get it, yeah.
What do you know about the prison camps in Canada? Are you aware of them?
I've been told from different sources that I know they're around, yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole pile of them, and some of the Canadian people that we have told that they should go and take a look at these horrific prison camps. And then they come up, yeah, well, there is this one in Alaska. I said, never mind Alaska. might be closer to Canada than to the U.S., but you have to take a look at what is happening. You know, Cold Lake near Edmonton, and where we come in from Vancouver, it's about a 15-minute flight to the next largest 250,000 prison with gas chambers and crematoriums. And most of these people are not aware that this thing from Hitler was a test run.
I know also the little blurb came out that we have and that this was tested in Britain during the last flu outbreak that happened a few years ago, heavily published over there and nothing here, and yet they had these special tractor trailers lined up, maybe 6 or 10 in a row outside the hospitals, and they were putting the corpses in there. And then I found out that in Louisiana the FEMA brought the same sort of things in there, and they had crematoriums in some of them, and they're full-time crematoriums, portable ones. I've seen a whole train go past me of these brand new spanking grey ones with refrigerated units on them. Nothing on the training except about 150 carats like that. And that came from the north, so I don't know where they had them stashed up north. But everything is being done. The preparations are underway for we're at that stage today.
Would you think that there is still something that we can do, you and I and many of the people that we know, to wake up the masses, to stop this kind of thing? Because there has to be still some power in numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is power in numbers, and at the same time, when any group has really started up from the grassroots, apart from the usual thing, you can't get the funding because you're not authorized, it often quickly, or if not immediately, infiltrated and taken over, and that's traditional as well. Anyone who wants to use a group must always be aware that this will happen, or this will attempt to do it to them. And all you can do is use the resources that you have to publish what you know, to go around at meetings and so on. It doesn't matter if 5 people, 10 or 15 turn up. That another few you've informed. And out of that 10, maybe 2 of them will stay in touch with you and learn more, and then maybe you'll want to teach more. And it's actually been going on for quite some time on a real grassroots level, and generally it's individuals themselves who finance their own publications. You'll never get mainstream media